suppose someone would offer a prize for a good, simple, and intelligent definition of the word government. I mean, what an immense service it would confer upon society. The government. What is it? Where is it? What does it do? What ought it to do? What ought it not to do? All we know is that it is a mysterious personage, and assuredly it is the most solicited, the most tormented, the most overwhelmed, the most admired, the most accused, the most invoked, the most hated, and the most provoked of any personage in the world. I have not the pleasure of knowing my listener, but I would stake 10-1 that for 6 months you have been making utopias, and if so, that you are looking to government for the realization of them. And should you, the listener, happen to be a lady, I have no doubt that you are sincerely desirous of seeing all the evils of suffering humanity remedied. And if you think this might easily be done, if government would only undertake it. But alas, my friends, that poor unfortunate personage, just like Figaro, knows not to whom to listen, nor where to turn. The 100,000 mouths of the press and of the platform cry out all at once. Organize labor and workmen. Repress insolence and the tyranny of capital. Make experiments upon manure and eggs. Cover the country with railways. Irrigate the plains. Plant the hills. Make model farms. Found social workshops. Nurture the children. Instruct the youth. Assist the aged. Send the inhabitants of towns into the country. Or equalize the profits of all trades. Lend money without interest to all who wish to borrow. Emancipate oppressed people everywhere. Rear and perfect the saddle horse. Encourage the arts. Provide us musicians and painters and architects. Restrict commerce and at the same time create a merchant navy. And oh, so much more. Good evening, my friends, and welcome to a special episode of Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz. I am your commentator for the evening, Jeffrey Bennett. You're listening to us live this 11th day of August, 2011, right here on the Republic Broadcasting Network. The commentary I share with you tonight is always has been an interest to me, as it was written, oh, so very long ago, in another time, in another age, and even in a different country, by an author that may be well-known or unknown to many of you. And for the course of this hour, we're going to share with you this marvelous rendering of history. And let's see if history truly does repeat itself. Oh, yes, we certainly could replace the word saddle horse and talk about horsepower and so many other interesting issues. But what else is it that government cries out for? What else is it that the media cries out for? They cry out and demand that we discover truth, and yet they report it not. They want to put a grain of reason into our heads. You see, the mission of government is to enlighten, to develop, to extend, to fortify, to spiritualize, and to sanctify the soul of the people. Do have a little patience, gentlemen, says government, in a beseeching tone. I will do what I can to satisfy you, but for this I must have resources. I have been preparing plans for 5 or 6 taxes which are quite new and not at all oppressive. You will see how willingly people will pay them. And then, of course, comes the great exclamation. No, indeed. Where is the merit of doing a thing with resources? Why does it not deserve the name of government? And so far from loading us with fresh taxes, we would have you withdraw the old ones. You ought to suppress the tobacco tax, the tax on liquor, the tax on letters, custom house duties, patents. And yet in the midst of this tumult, and now that the country has again and again changed the administration for not having satisfied all its demands, I wanted to show that they were contradictory. But what could I have been thinking of? Could I not keep this unfortunate observation to myself? I have lost my character forever. I am looked upon as a man without heart and without feeling, a dry philosopher, an individualist, a plebeian, in a word, an economist of the practical school. But pardon me, sublime writers who stop at nothing, not even at contradictions. I am wrong without a doubt, and I would willingly retract. I should be glad enough, you may be sure, if you had really discovered a beneficent and inexhaustible being calling itself the government, which has bread for all mouths, work for all hands, capital for all enterprises, credit for all projects, oil for all wounds, balm for all sufferings, advice for all perplexities, solutions for all doubts, truths for all intellects, and diversions for all who want them. And government supplied milk for infancy and wine for old age, which can provide for all our wants, satisfy all our curiosity, correct all our errors, repair all our faults, and exempt us henceforth from the necessity for foresight, prudence, judgment, sagacity, experience, order, economy, temperance, activity? What reason could I have for not desiring to see such a discovery made? Indeed, the more I reflect upon it, the more do I see that nothing could be more convenient than that we should all of us have within our reach an inexhaustible source of wealth and enlightenment, a universal physician, an unlimited treasure, and an infallible counselor such as you describe government to be. And therefore it is that I want to have it pointed out and defined, and that a prize should be offered to the first discoverer of the phoenix, that mythical bird that rises from the ashes. For no one would think of asserting that this precious discovery has yet been made, since up to this time everything presenting itself under the name of the government has at some time been overturned by the people, precisely because it does not fulfill the rather contradictory conditions of the program. My friends, I will venture to say that I fear we are, in this respect, the dupes of one of the strangest illusions which have ever taken possession of the human mind. You see, man recoils from trouble, from suffering, and yet he is condemned by nature to the suffering of privation, if he does not take the trouble to work, of course. He has to choose, then, between these two evils. What means can he adopt to avoid both? Now, there remains now, and there will remain, only one way, which is to enjoy the labors of others. Such a course of conduct prevents the trouble and the satisfaction from preserving their natural proportion, and causes all the trouble to become the lot of one set of persons and all the satisfaction that of another. This is the origin of slavery and of plunder, whatever its form may be, whether that of wars, imposition, violence, restrictions, frauds, and monstrous abuses, but consistent with the thought which has given them birth. Oppression could be detested and resisted. It can hardly be called absurd. Slavery is disappearing, thank heaven, or is it? But on the other hand, our disposition to defend our property prevents direct and open plunder from being easy. And yet it happens on a daily basis. One thing, however, does remain. It is the original inclination which exists in all men to divide the lot of life into two parts, throwing the trouble upon others and keeping the satisfaction for themselves. It remains to be shown under what new form this sad tendency is manifesting itself. The oppressor, you see, no longer acts directly and with his own powers upon his victim. Oh, no, our conscience has become too sensitive for that. The tyrant and his victim are still present, but there is an intermediate person between them, which is the government. That is the law itself. What can be better calculated to silence our scruples, and which is perhaps better appreciated to overcome all resistance? We all therefore put in our claim under some pretext or other and apply to government. We say to it, I am dissatisfied at the proportion between my labor and my enjoyments. I should like, for the sake of restoring the desired equilibrium, to take a part of the possessions of others. But this would be dangerous, you see. Could not you facilitate the thing for me, you say to government? Could you not find me a good place? Or check the industry of my competitors? Or perhaps lend me gratuitously some capital which you may take from its possessor? Could you not bring up my children at the public expense, or grant me some prizes, or secure me a competence when I have attained my 50th year? By this mean I shall gain my end with an easy conscience, for the law will have acted for me, and I shall have all the advantages of plunder without its risk or its disgrace. As it is certain, on the one hand, that we are all making some similar request to the government, and as on the other it is proved that government cannot satisfy one party without adding to the labor of the others, until I can obtain another definition of the word government, I feel authorized to give it my own. Who knows but it may obtain the prize? And here it is. The government is the great fiction through which everybody endeavors to live at the expense of everyone else. For now, as formerly, everyone is more or less for profiting by the labors of others. No one would dare to profess such a sentiment. He even hides it from himself, and then what is done? Well, a medium is thought of. Government is applied to, and every class in its turn comes to it and says, you who can take justifiably and honestly take from the public, and we will partake. Alas, government is only too much disposed to follow this diabolical advice, for it is composed of ministers and officials, of men, in short, who, like all other men, desire in their hearts and always seize every opportunity with eagerness to increase their wealth and their influence. No, government is not slow to perceive the advantages it may derive from the part which is entrusted to it by the public. It is glad to be the judge and the master of the destinies of all. It will take much, for then a large share will remain for itself. It will multiply the number of its agencies. It will enlarge the circle of its privileges. It will end by approaching a ruinous proportion. But the most remarkable part of it is the astonishing blindness of the public through it all. When successful soldiers used to reduce the vanquished to slavery, they were barbarous, but they were not absurd. Their object, like ours, was to live at other people's expense. And they did not fail to do so. What are we to think of a people who never seem to suspect that reciprocal plunder is no less plunder because it is reciprocal, that it is no less criminal because it is executed legally and with order, that it adds nothing to the public good and yet diminishes it, just in proportion to the cost of the expensive medium which we call the government? And it is this great chimera which the French nation, for example, placed in 1848 for the edification of the people as a frontispiece to their constitution. The following is the beginning of the preamble of that French constitution. It stated, France has constituted itself a republic for the purpose of raising all the citizens to an ever-increasing degree of morality, enlightenment, and well-being. A government is promising to do all of that, to raise all the citizens to an ever-increasing degree of morality, enlightenment, and well-being. Hot dog, but I sure like the sound of that. But is that the job of government? And yet, it was France, or an abstraction, which is to raise the French to morality, well-being, etc. It is not by yielding to this strange delusion that we are led to expect everything from an energy not our own. Is it not giving out that there is, independently of the French, a virtuous, enlightened, and rich being who can and will bestow upon them benefits? I could remove the word French and put in the word American, or Italian, or Russian, or Chinese. It matters not, my friends. Is not this supposing, and certainly very gratuitously, that there are between America and Americans, between the simple, abridged, and abstract denomination of all the individualities, and these individualities themselves, relations as of father to son, tutor to pupil, professor to his scholar? Oh, I know it is often said metaphorically that the country is a tender mother. But to show the insanity of such a constitutional proposition, it is only needed to show that it may be reversed, not only without inconvenience, but even with advantage. Would it be less exact to say that the French have constituted themselves a republic to raise French to an average increasing degree or ever-increasing degree of morality, enlightenment, and well-being? Now, where is the value of an axiom where the subject and the attribute could change places without inconvenience? Everybody understands what is meant by the mother will feed the child, but it would be ridiculous to say that the child would feed the mother. We here in America formed another idea of the relations of the citizens with the government when they placed these simple words at the head of our Constitution. We the people of the United States, for the purpose of forming a more perfect union, of establishing justice, of securing interior tranquility, of providing for our common defense, of increasing the general well-being, and of securing the benefits of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity, decree, etc., etc. Here there is no chimerical creation, no abstraction from which the citizens may demand everything or anything. They expect nothing except from themselves and their own energy. Now, if I may be permitted to criticize the first words of the French Constitution of 1848, I would remark that what I complain of is something more than a mere metaphysical subtlety, as might seem at first sight. I contend that this personification of government has been, in past times, and will be hereafter, a fertile source of calamities and revolutions. There is, after all, the public on one side, government on the other, considered as two distinct beings, the latter bound to bestow upon the former, and the former having the right to claim from the latter all imaginable human benefits. What will be the consequence? We'll talk about that when we return.
I'd like to get you on a sailboat to China, all to myself alone.
The Berkey Light's unique design combines the age-old process of microporous filtration coupled with modern state-of-the-art technology and the highest quality materials, bringing you the finest water filter available anywhere. The revolutionary Berkey Light, with its exclusive black Berkey filter elements, remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels. Harmful or unwanted chemicals are reduced to below detectable levels. And it reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury while leaving the nutritional minerals your body needs. Made of durable Lexan, the material used in making bulletproof glass, the system is durable, rugged, and yet attractive. The Berkey Light is transparent, so there is no guesswork when refilling the system. The water level is always visible. The rechargeable LED lighting system is beautiful as a nightlight and as necessary in emergency situations. Get the Berkey Light, the transparent water filter, for only $259.
Call today, 877-605-9200. That's 877-605-9200. Estrogen dominance, a brand new 20th century disease, a phrase coined by Dr. John R. Lee 35 years ago. Dr. Lee proved that all the estrogen that is coming from food and water is having a devastating effect on our health. The rapid rise in breast cancer, uterine cancer, prostate cancer, weight gain, osteoporosis, feminizing of our boys and early puberty of our girls, and also the destruction of natural killer cell function. Natural killer cells are our only protection from cancer and viral infection. Dr. Lee found that using natural progesterone, about 20 milligrams per day, would not only reverse osteoporosis, but would greatly reduce the cancer issues, as well as dozens of other health challenges we face today. Visit our website, healthlinkamerica.com, to order the DVD on hormone imbalance. Learn how hormone imbalance destroys the immune system and get started on natural progesterone and Cyto-S. It will not only change your life, it may in fact save your life. Once again, that website is healthlinkamerica.com.
Help, I've fallen and I can't get up. If you have an elderly loved one, please listen. Whether it's fire danger, a serious fall, or other type of home emergency, Life Alert is there for you. The company with the slogan, Help, I've Fallen and I Can't Get Up, protects 60,000 members.
The first time I fell in that bedroom and I couldn't reach the phone.
When you have a heart attack like I did and there's no one there, Life Alert was there for me.
Having a secure feeling through Life Alert is ideal.
My independence is possible because of it.
Listen to former U.S. Surgeon General Dr. C. Everett Koop.
Thanks to Life Alert, you can live alone without ever being alone. That's why I wear one.
With Life Alert protection, elderly people can often postpone going to a nursing home for several years. For a free brochure about Life Alert service, call now, 1-800-410-0739, 1-800-410-0739. Call Life Alert now for your free brochure, 1-800-410-0739.
Richie Connick bringing us back out of the break. Welcome back to tonight's Life, Liberty, and All That Jazz. I've sat on this essay for a number of years. I don't know why, and I drew it back up out of my archives several weeks ago. Sitting on it, waiting for what I felt was the not just an opportunity, but I come to this program every day. We spend a lot of time on economics and other political issues and the debt ceilings and all this other nonsense. And there's times I have to walk away from what's going on. I get off the air at night and walk out of the studio, go out of the living room. My wife is watching Hannity or some other garbage. And it's garbage to me because, first of all, I've been living it all day. I don't particularly care to listen to any more of it and watch these talking head idiots. And yet I love to go back in history, and I love to take a marvelous essay such as the one I'm sharing with you. And if you're not familiar with the author, I'll let you know at the end who it is. It says so much. He, as we concluded before the break, he talks about a personification of government in the past having been and will in the future be a fertile source of calamities and revolutions. Isn't that what our government has become? He says there's the public on one side, government on the other, considered as two distinct beings. The latter, meaning the government, expected to bestow upon the former having the right to claim from the latter all imaginable human benefits. And what will be the consequences? He says, in fact, government is not maimed and cannot be so. It has two hands, one to receive and the other to give. Although I think today it's one to receive and the other to take. But in other words, it has a rough hand and a smooth hand. The activity of the second necessarily subordinate to the activity of the first. Strictly speaking, government may not take and not restore. This is evident and may be explained by the porous and absorbing nature of its hands, which always retain a part and sometimes the whole of what they touch. The thing that never was seen and never will be seen or conceived is that government can restore to the public more than it is taken from it. It is therefore ridiculous for us to appear before it in the humble attitude of beggars. It is radically impossible for it to confer a particular benefit upon any one of the individualities which constitute the community without inflicting a greater injury upon the community as a whole. Our requisitions, therefore, place it in a dilemma. If it refuses to grant the request made to it, it is accused of weakness, ill will, incapacity, it being the government, my friends. If it endeavors to grant all these requests, it is obliged to load the people with fresh taxes to do more harm than good and to bring upon itself from another quarter the general displeasure. And thus you see the public has but two hopes. The government makes two promises, many benefits, and no taxes. Hopes and promises, which, being contradictory, can never be realized. Now, is this not the cause of all of our discontent? For between the government, which lavishes promises which it is impossible to perform, and the public, which has conceived hopes which can never be realized, two classes of men interpose, the ambitious and the utopians. It is circumstances which give these their cue. It is enough if these vassals of popularity cry out to the people, "The authorities are deceiving you. If we were in their place, we would load you with the benefits and exempt you from taxes." Sounds like a campaign speech. Gee, that could have been a line right out of Rick Perry's playbook. And yet, just as they did with Obama, with his hope and change garbage, the people believe, the people hope, the people make a revolution. No sooner are their friends at the head of affairs than they are called upon to redeem their pledge, give us work and bread and assistance and credit and instruction and more money. That's what the people say. And withal deliver us, as you promised, from the demands of the tax gatherers. You see, the government is no less embarrassed than the former one, for it soon finds that it is much more easy to promise than it is to perform. It tries to gain time, for this is necessary for maturing its vast projects. At first, it makes a few timid attempts. On one hand, it institutes a little elementary instruction. On the other, it makes a little reduction in some taxes. But the contradiction is forever starting up before it. If it would be philanthropic, it must attend to its exchequer. If it neglects its exchequer, it must abstain from being philanthropic. My friends, these two promises are forever clashing with each other. It cannot be otherwise. To live upon credit, which is the same as exhausting the future, is certainly a present means of reconciling them. An attempt is made to do a little good now at the expense of a great deal of harm in the future. But such proceedings call forth the specter of bankruptcy, which puts an end to credit. What is to be done then? We'll talk more about it after we come back from the break. So I think we're going to find it of tremendous interest. It shows that history does repeat itself.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com. where reality shatters illusion.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
Much of what we've been discussing throughout this last, or I've been commenting on for this last 30-some-odd minutes, certainly must ring a bell with so many of you. Once again, to remember to live upon credit, which is the same as exhausting the future. Isn't that what we've been talking about? Spending our children and grandchildren into oblivion? It is certainly a means of reconciling the yin and the yang of it all. An attempt is made to do a little good of now at the expense of a great deal of harm in the future, but such proceedings call forth the specter of bankruptcy, which ultimately puts an end to credit. And so what is to be done then? Why, then the new government takes a bold step. It unites all its forces in order to maintain itself. It smothers opinion. It has recourse to arbitrary measures, ridicules its former maxims, declares that it is impossible to conduct the administration except at the risk of being unpopular. In short, it proclaims itself to be governmental. And it is here that other candidates for popularity are waiting for it. They exhibit the same illusion, pass by the same way, obtain the same success, and are soon swallowed up in the same gulf. They had arrived at that point in France in February 1849. At that time, the illusion which is the subject of this commentary has made more way than any former period in the ideas of the French people in connection with socialist doctrines. They expected more firmly than ever that government, under a republican form, would open in grand style the source of benefits and close that of taxation. "We have often been deceived," said the people, "but we will see to it ourselves this time and take care not to be deceived again." And what could the provisional government do? Alas, just that which is always done in similar circumstances, made more promises and gained more time. It did so, of course, and to give it promises more weight, it announced them publicly, thus increase of prosperity. Diminution of labor, assistance, credit, gratuitous instruction, agricultural colonies, cultivation of wasteland, and at the same time, reduction of the tax on salt, liquor, letters, meat. All this shall be granted when the National Assembly meets. Well, we call it a Congress here, but same difference. So the National Assembly meets, and as it is impossible to realize two contradictory things, its task, its sad task, is to withdraw, as gently as possible, one after the other, all the decrees of the provisional government. However, in order somewhat to mitigate the cruelty of the deception, it is found necessary to negotiate a little. Certain engagements are fulfilled, others are, in a measure, begun, and therefore the new administration is compelled to contrive some new taxes. Now, I transport myself in thought to a period not too far the distant past, and ask myself with sorrowful forebodings, what will come to pass when agents of the new government go into the country to collect new taxes upon legacies and revenues and the profits of agricultural traffic? It is to be hoped that my presentiments may not be verified, but I foresee a difficult part of the candidates for popularity to play. Read the last manifesto of one of the political parties, which they issued on the occasion of the election of the president. Oh, it is rather long, but at length it concludes with these words: government ought to give a great deal to the people and take little from them. It's always the same tactics, or rather the same mistake. Government is bound to give gratuitous instruction and education to all the citizens. It is bound to give a general and appropriate professional education, as much as possible adapted to the wants, the callings, and the capacities of each citizen. It is bound to teach every citizen his duty to God, to man, and to himself, to develop his sentiments, his tendencies, and his faculties, to teach him, in short, the scientific part of his labor, to make him understand his own interest and to give him a knowledge of his rights. It is bound to place within the reach of all literature and the arts, the patrimony of thought, the treasures of the mind, and all those intellectual enjoyments which elevate and strengthen the soul. It is bound to give compensation for every accident from fire, inundation, experienced by a citizen. It is bound to attend to the relations of capital with labor and to become the regulator of credit. It is bound to afford important encouragement and efficient protection to agriculture. It is bound to purchase railroads, canals, and mines, and doubtless to transact affairs that with that industrial capacity which characterizes it. It is bound to encourage useful experiments, to promote and assist them by every means likely to make them successful. As a regulator of credit, it will exercise such extensive influence over industrial and agricultural associations as shall ensure them success. Government is bound to do all this in addition to the services to which it is already pledged. And furthermore, it is always to maintain a menacing attitude toward foreigners, for, according to those who sign the program, bound together by this holy union and by the precedents of the American Republic, we carry our wishes and hopes beyond the boundaries which despotism has placed between nations. The rights which we desire for ourselves, we desire for all those who are oppressed by the yoke of tyranny. We desire that our glorious arms should still, if necessary, be the army of liberty. Well, you see that the gentle hand of government, but the good hand which gives and distributes, will be very busy under the government of the reformers. You think, perhaps, that it will be the same with the rough hand, that hand which dives into our pockets? Do not deceive yourselves. The aspirants after popularity would not know their trade if they had not the art. When they show the gentle hand to conceal the rough one, their reign will assuredly be the jubilee of the taxpayers. It is superfluities, not necessities, they say, which ought to be taxed. Truly it will be a good time when the exchequer, for the sake of loading us with benefits will content itself with curtailing our superfluities. Of course, in this country, the exchequer would, in effect, be the secretary, the treasurer. Now, this is not all, my friends. The reformers intend that, quote, taxation shall lose its oppressive character and be only an act of fraternity. Oh, good heavens! I know it is the fashion to thrust fraternity in everywhere, but I did not imagine it would ever be put into the hands of the tax collectors. To come to the details, those who sign the program say, we desire the immediate abolition of those taxes which affect the absolute necessities of life, such as salt and liquors, etc., etc. The reform of the tax on landed property and customs and patents. Gratuitous justice, that is, the simplifications of its forms and reduction of its expenses. Now, this no doubt has reference to stamps. And thus the tax on landed property and customs and patents and stamps and salts and liquors and postage are all included. No, these gentlemen have found out the secret of giving an excessive activity to the gentle hand of government while they entirely paralyze its rough hand. And yet I ask the impartial listener, is it not childishness, and more than that, dangerous childishness? Is it not inevitable that we shall have revolution after revolution? If there is a determination never to stop until this contradiction is realized, to give nothing to government and to receive much from it? If the reformers were to come to power, would they not become the victims of the means which they employ to take possession of it? Citizens, in all times, two political systems have been in existence, and each may be maintained by good reasons. According to one of them, government ought to do much, but then it ought to take much. According to the other, this twofold activity ought to be little felt. We have to choose between these two systems. But as regards the third system, which partakes of both the others, and which consists in exacting everything from government without ever giving anything, it is chimerical, absurd, childish, contradictory, and most importantly, dangerous. Those who parade it for the sake of the pleasure of accusing all governments of weakness and then thus exposing them to your attacks are only flattering and deceiving you, while they are deceiving themselves. And for ourselves, we consider that government is and ought to be nothing whatsoever but the united power of the people, organized, not to be an instrument of oppression and mutual plunder among citizens, but on the contrary, to secure to everyone his own, and to cause justice and security to reign. That which I have just shared with you was written by a 49-year-old man, probably not more than weeks before his passing, in the year 1849. Frederick Bastiat. 1849, my friends. Obviously, much of his writings, the law, is most well known. We're very much what we do here at RBN. It was commentary, in many respects, on government. The abuses and misuses of the people. This was written 162 years ago. At one point throughout my sharing this essay with you, I stated that everywhere the word France was used, I could have substituted the word America or the United States of America. How many similarities did you see within this commentary of what we are living through here today? How many people, I'm not going to say give to the government, because most people don't necessarily willingly pay taxes to the government. We are told we have no choice. Some of us know better. Some don't. But the fact of the matter is that you've got a percentage of the people in this nation today, the amount of taxes they pay each and every year do not even pay the interest on the national debt. Why is it that we didn't, 3 weeks ago, have some hotshot Tea Party guy standing up in front of both the United States House of Representatives and the United States Senate sharing this very commentary? Government has become like the evil Robin Hood. They rob from the poor to give to the rich. Think about it. Government cannot possibly be all to everyone. Look at our Constitution. Even look at the words of the French Constitution. It's obvious that they attempted to model theirs in some degree after our Constitution. So much in the monarchical nonsense they had over there with the various Louis, etc., etc. The people that are on the take, the food stamps, the welfare, the unemployment. You know, the unemployment numbers came out, and oh boy, they're really good, except that they don't include... What was the one area they just had massive layoffs in? You know, Borders books going out, some 12,000 plus people will be unemployed due to that. Did it have something to do with the FAA or something else here recently? And segments of it basically are out of a job? Those numbers were not calculated in the unemployment reports that came out. That'll be modified next week. You notice there's always a modification. They come out with a set of numbers 1 week, and by the next week, it's considerably compounded. I have enough caring for my own family. Why should I be required to be taxed to the point of caring for several other families? People I don't know, people I've never met. I shared with you yesterday the story of the Hispanic couple at Walgreens who whipped out a food, a food stamp card. They don't issue food stamps or little checks anymore. It's all done on a Visa debit card. I guess that's supposed to make you feel better. And they used it to pay for a bottle of cranberry juice, and the gal, who I know quite well, said that after she did it, she looked at the bottom of their ticket and saw they still had $800 were the food stamps left for the month. The month was already 10 days old, and they still had over $800 left. I know a young woman with a couple of kids that they happen to be white, by the way, who barely scrapes by on $190 a month in food stamps. She's got a friend who's got three kids, and she's sucking up $700 and some. Are people just lying? Or you're treated better because you're a different color. Reverse discrimination, as it were. But the point is, we're paying for that. Stay with us, my friends. We'll be back with some closing comments.
corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Are you serious about maintaining or improving your health? If you are, you need Terravim. Terravim offers a full line of vitamins, minerals, and herbs for people serious about enjoying a healthy lifestyle. Our product lines include Alamax, Magnesen, Silver 100, Natura Health Products, Gala Herbs, and Terravim's private label, and undergo rigorous clinical studies by leading researchers and contain physician-grade research-based therapeutic doses of nutrients. All of our vitamin, mineral, and herb products are manufactured under current good manufacturing practices. This is in an FDA-registered production facility, and we guarantee that the ingredients in the supplements are exactly what's on the label. We also provide free consultation for all our products along with general wellness information. All orders over $45 ship free, and all orders received by 3 p.m. ship the same day. When shopping online, enter the coupon code RBN for a 10% discount. To order now, call 1-866-647-4372. That's 1-866-647-4372, or visit terravim.com.
Do you need help getting your child to behave? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'm willing to give away thousands of my best-selling Total Transformation programs for free. All you do is tell us how the program works for you and your family. Did it turn around your child's behavior? Did the screaming and arguing stop in your home? Is he doing better in school? The Total Transformation has helped hundreds of thousands of families. I want to see what it can do for you, and I'm willing to let you have it for free. Just order my program. Use it with your child, then send me your feedback. I'll refund the purchase price of the program. You keep the Total Transformation Program forever, for free. You don't have to struggle with your child's bad behavior one more day, because now you can try my Total Transformation, and the program will be free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-583-1093. 1-800-583-1093. That's 1-800-583-1093. 583-1093.
I can't believe it. It's hard to conceive it that you turn away romance. Are you pretending? It looks like the ending, unless I can have one more chance to prove dear my life a wreck. My life a wreck you're making.
Frédéric Bastier. During that period of time, 1849, 50, and 51, France was in the middle of another one of their little mini revolutions. People were hungry. They expected government to provide it, and in the words of their previous rulers, Marie Antoinette, who said, let them eat cake, as you understand, her meaning was not cake like you and I know of. It wasn't Baskin or Robbins or, a Betty Crocker in the oven type thing. Cake was feces. Face was number two. It was poop. And that's exactly the arrogance of the rulers since the beginning of time. Cicero, Caesar, the FDRs of this world, the Obamas of this world, the Bushes of this world. That is the arrogance, telling the people to eat doo-doo. By the way, during that period of time, the French government decided to slap the people in the face, and they took the coin of the realm, the Napoleon III coins, and they removed Napoleon's face, and they put on the Roman god of agriculture. You want to eat? Grow your own, was their attitude. The problem is the government would have taxed what they grew, very much like our government's wanting to do here now. And so when I read the words of Bastiat, I'm always reminded of the fact that history does repeat itself. Everything he spoke of in this essay, which, by the way, is entitled Government, has come to pass in this nation. Simple words. We the people of the United States, for the purpose of forming a more perfect union, of establishing justice, of securing interior tranquility. That means interior peace. Of providing for our common defense, of increasing the general well-being, and of securing the benefits of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. What happened to all of that? America went to sleep a long time ago with Rip Van Winkle. I'm not sure if enough Americans are going to wake up in time to say enough is enough and create its own version of a French Revolution. I'll tell you who can eat the cake, but they better eat quickly, because I got a rope hanging for every one of them. Thank you for indulging me tonight in the kind of commentary that I relish in sharing with you. I find it thought-provoking. For some of you, I guess you'd rather hear the modern up-to-date foibles of D.C. I grow weary of it. We know of the problems in D.C. We know of the problems in the nation. Now let's go back in history and get an understanding of why. Till the good Lord sees fit to bring us together again without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett.
And all that jazz. Taste and your fingertips, they cannot be replaced. Oh, baby, what you got, nobody has, and I got you. Yes, I got you. I got you, and all that jazz.
Ever climbing as the dollar continues to spiral into a free fall.